Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the
Geek Buddies! Hey!
We're back at it on this usually we go on Fridays, but we're dropping this on Thursday because of timing and schedules and what have you. And yes, as you noticed, we do not have Mike Vogel for this particular episode yet again, but Michael will be back in town tomorrow, and Michael and I will record an X-Men 97 review and talk about a couple other things as well. So maybe a mini Geek Buddies episode coming in a couple of days here from us. But for today, you have the two of us, and we should introduce ourselves. I am the Outlaw John Rocha, writer, producer, and host here on the Geek Buddies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer, where you can see some of our current work on YouTube every weekend with the third season of Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City. That might have been the finale last weekend. Vogel would be the better person to ask about this. But also, seasons one and season two are on Netflix, which means season three probably going there at some point, too.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. There was a recent finale for a TV show, the Curb Your Enthusiasm. Shannon, did you get a chance to watch it? Feelings, thoughts? Have you not watched it yet?
I haven't watched it yet. I haven't watched it yet. There's been so much stuff we have had to watch,
yes,
and some things right. We have to watch twice. I think I'm on the second to last episode of Curb right now, but okay. The internet being what it is, I have an idea.
Yeah.
Of where the finale is going.
Me too. And I have to catch up as well. I'm like three or four episodes behind. I'm going to burn through them for sure. Because there's a lot of TV. And speaking of a lot of TV, today we are going to be talking about a number of things here. First of all, we're going to talk about some trailers, which we'll have a little bit later on. Some of the new trailers, of course, the Joker Folia Do trailer dropped just a couple of days ago. We're also going to jump into the stories here of Robert Downey Jr., possibly basically opening the door to coming back to the MCU, which a lot of people have already suspected. We're going to talk about that new Superman logo that James Gunn dropped at CinemaCon. We're going to get into the conversations here about these revivals for Heroes and Blair Witch. And speaking of TV, our main topic is going to be reviewing episode one of Fallout, the new series that dropped on Prime Video, based on the Fallout video game series as well. But one more thing before we jump in, quickly, Shannon McClung, you're not going to get a chance to be on the show for X-Men 97. So can you give us your quick thoughts on episode five, X-Men 97? What did you think? What were your feelings? A lot of people are suffering emotional trauma from that episode. Where are you at with X-Men 97 episode five?
So our listeners have heard many times, our audience has heard many times, that we have a text thread where it's not just the three of us. It's also our friend Jonathan Gabay, who is an executive. And I want to say Mike Vogel, I can't remember if it was Vogel or Gabay. No, it was Vogel. Mm-hmm. Wrote, because he's in Japan, and they are 16 hours ahead, I think.
Yeah.
Vogel wrote in the middle of the night. I mean, it was like... 3 a.m.
That son of a bitch. Yeah.
Saying, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this. When you all watch the new episode, reach out. And then Gabay, who happens to be on the East Coast right now because he's on set for a pilot, Gabay had said, I've seen it. Vogel said, how are you awake so early? East Coast. I'm in New York. But getting up, like having those expectations, immediately put on an episode as I wake up. Watching it at the beginning, I'm kind of like, okay, this is good. All that character's here. Oh, that's fun. And then there's a turn.
Yeah.
And it was seeing how they have gone a little more mature with each successive episode.
Yeah.
Where they take this, and then reading interviews with some of the creators afterwards of the intent of where they are taking it. It's like, man, this makes... Bodemaio We don't know what he did. Was dismissed from the project for apparently a pretty good reason. The guy is writing a very compelling story throughout throughout this first season. Because it was one of those things, like, I'm like, I can't believe they're actually going for this right now. Like, I can't believe they're doing it. I can't believe they're going for it.
So I
have no idea. Maybe with one character, I have an idea, but like, I have no idea where they're going with the rest of this series. I mean, they really, all of the writers, the directors, the talent, everyone's doing, they're firing on all cylinders. And again, for someone that did not watch much of that old series, to see how immediately invested I've become in these characters, it's really a testament to the storytelling capabilities of the creative team.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say more of it, obviously, when Mike and I break it down in our spoiler review. But I will say, just right off the bat, I thought this was an incredible episode of television. I actually, because of our text messages as well, Shannon, I recorded myself watching it as a watch-along. But then I saw other people's watch-alongs, and they lay in clips from the series. And I didn't have anybody to do that for me in time. So I just kind of recorded the watch-along. But I had no idea I was going to be so emotional by the end of it. Even though people had said, oh, you're going to be emotional. I'm like, well, I haven't watched the animated series. So whatever is going on, I guess, is connected to the animated series, the original animated series. So I won't be able to bring that to it. But that was wrong, because by the end, I was super emotional about what happened and what went down. And of course, you couldn't ignore the allusions of what Bo DiMaio was saying in his script. And in reading his subsequent tweets, it was very clear that I was on the right path in my analysis of it before I read any of those tweets or understood what he was trying to say initially. And so seeing all of that just was really heartbreaking. And, you know, at a time nowadays when everyone is trying to destroy others and destroy anyone that's what they consider not normal, it's an episode that really resonates on that level. And the animation and the writing and the voiceover work and the end result here, which leaves such a shocking reaction for everyone. And then everyone questioning what's true and what isn't true, who is alive and who isn't, and all of that. So I thought, for me, this was one of the most fantastic episodes of animated television, possibly television, that I've ever seen. So pretty, pretty impressive. And as I said, we'll have a spoiler review of it with Michael Vogel and I coming up either tomorrow or in a couple of days on Saturday. So just look for that as your week goes along. But anyway, we are here to talk about these things, Shannon. So let's get into it first and foremost. Let's talk about this. Robert Downey Jr., let's talk about this. Let's lead with our boy, Robert Downey Jr. He was talking recently, you know, he's been, you know, after he won the Oscar there for Best Supporting Actor, and of course with Oppenheimer winning Best Picture and Nolan Best Director and all of that. It's a good time for him to be coming back out here to have some fun conversations and be interviewed here. But he was talking to Esquire, which is in the most recent magazine here, and he was asked about whether he would, quote, come back to play Iron Man in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And he said he would happily, quote, unquote, do it. He said, quote, it's too integral a part of my DNA. That role chose me. He said to never bet against Kevin Feige. It's a losing bet. He's the horse. He will always win. And he said that anything is possible with the multiverse and with the MCU, and that he is happily would happily consider coming back if the opportunity opened itself. So he said that there would be this process. Gwyneth Paltrow chimed in and said as well, and said there would be this process of Jon Favreau and Robert and I going into Jon's trailer. He was talking about how Downey made the role his. She was saying how Downey made the role his sometimes by throwing out the lines, and they would just kind of impromptu do the lines there, and what he was going for and what he was trying to nail down there. So just fascinating stuff here, Shannon. What are your thoughts when you hear the idea that Robert Downey Jr. is considering coming back, saying happily he would come back? And he says, I always say never, ever bet against Kevin Feige. So what are your thoughts on this?
You know, I think it's interesting because you have to look at the trajectory of Robert Downey Jr.'s career with Marvel. Outside of the, 10 years, 11 years that he played Tony Stark, you know, the Sherlock Holmes movies did pretty well. But outside of that, nothing else really clicked. I mean, he did that movie, The Soloist, with Jamie Foxx. I think that was going to be a little bit of Oscar bait. Didn't really take. He also did The Judge with Robert Duvall. That's another one that didn't quite take. And then you look at his career post-Endgame, And the first thing he does is Doolittle, and it is a massive flop. Like, it does not do well. And I think post Endgame, immediately the press is asking him, "Would you come back? Would you come back? Would you come back?" And like, I don't have his interviews right in front of me, but the answer was either cryptic or kind of like, I've done that. You know, let's we gave Tony a great ending. That was an incredible ride. Let's go ahead and close the book. Now he goes and does Oppenheimer and he wins his Oscar. Now that his role in Oppenheimer has really validated his career for a lot of people. I mean, he's spoken about that. He thinks some of the best work he's done was his role as Tony Stark. And he's like that work gets overlooked because of the type of movie that it's in. But now that he has won this Academy Award, like this was the second time he was nominated. First time was for Chaplin.
Yeah.
He was nominated for Best Actor. So now he wins this award. I can absolutely see him being open to the possibility of coming back to play Tony Stark, because I don't think, obviously they paid him a truckload of money.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think he does however many movies he did with him. What was it? 9.
Yeah.
If he's not enjoying himself. So now that his career has been validated with an Academy Award win, he absolutely would open the door to come back. Now the question remains, do Feige and company want to bring him back? I mean, the secret to, you know, these franchises sustaining themselves is having new characters for the audience to fall in love with. And if you're constantly going back to the past, eventually you are going to run out of steam.
Yeah.
So it sure seems like, you know, would they welcome the idea of bringing him back? Yeah, probably, because his presence in a movie is going to get a lot of butts in seats.
Yeah.
But at the same time, how do you bring him back? Like, how do you bring him back without overshadowing the new characters that you're trying to feature? So it's going to be a really interesting balancing act. I mean, what they pulled off with No Way Home, with bringing Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield back, I mean, I imagine that was not easy. You know, paying homage to the past while also focusing on the future, which would be Tom Holland. So it will be very interesting to see. I mean, obviously, the, you know, behind closed doors at Marvel, they're having discussions of like, how do we write the ship here? Is Robert Downey Jr. the key to doing that? I don't know. But in any case, I mean, as they keep delaying a lot of their movies, it seems like they're going to have some time to figure it out. But man, I would love to see Tony Stark have a scene with Reed Richards. Like, I think that would be a lot of fun.
I think you're absolutely right in this way, in that, like, he got his Oscar. And once you get your Oscar, it's like your perspective changes. And I think what you said also has some really strong validity. He's tried to move outside the Marvel Cinematic Universe and has not yielded positive results. It doesn't mean he hasn't delivered good performances in those movies, sure, but overall, they haven't been something that was necessarily saying, hey, Robert Downey Jr. is clearly a movie star. We can launch multiple franchises off of him. Sherlock Holmes stuff, yes, and also Oppenheimer, yes, but he's ensemble in Oppenheimer. It's Cillian Murphy's movie, really. And so you go, okay, this is the approach here. And now you go, well, is this possibility open? And so to me, I don't think he says this unless he's considering it. I think this is like Hollywood speak for, this is going to happen. Probably you put your money on it, put your house on it. This is going to happen. Even though Feige said after Endgame, you know, we are going to keep that moment and not touch that moment again. We all worked very hard for many years to get to that. We would never want to magically undo it in any way, because there were all kinds of rumors that he was going to pop up in Multiverse of Madness, or, you know, Tom Cruise's Iron Man. There were all these rumors. So I think the smart move, of course, is Secret Wars. Comes in for a certain amount of time, does exactly what he did at Endgame, where they had to drag him into it. He does what needs to get done, sacrifices himself. I don't think he'll sacrifice himself again here, but he'll come in for whatever reason in whatever time it is, and I think it'll be fun, it'll be enjoyable, but it won't be the majority of the movie, and I think that's how you do it. You bring him back for one last sweet hurrah, set the ship right again, right after Secret Wars. You hope Marvel goes back on another winning streak, and we go on from there. So I think that's the way to do it. And I think him saying that is essentially Hollywood speak for opening the door that it's going to happen. So I'm in that camp that it's absolutely going to happen.
Well, and my guess is if this deal was signed and delivered, that if people were talking, like, he would be absolutely mum on the subject. Like, no, I think it would be abject denial. I think the fact that he is saying that he would be open to it means that they have not approached him, that this is not in any way solidified. He is expressing the fact that, man, that was fun. I enjoyed Kevin Feige. Absolutely, I would do it again.
Yeah, yeah. Let's move on to another, before we leave superhero stuff, let's do one more thing here. James Gunn at CinemaCon. He wasn't there live, but he debuted this over Zoom. The new Superman logo here, Shannon. What do you think of this logo here? It was posted by Cinemark, verified to be genuine by IGN. So it is absolutely the logo. It features a thinner and sharper S, as you can see there, than the one that was on the previous live action iteration that Henry Cavill wore. So what do you think of this logo? It is reminiscent of what we'd gotten with that picture of the Kingdom Con-S breaking through the ice of the Fortress of Solitude. But you look at this one, what are your thoughts here? It's a little softer, simplistic, but still powerful. And the glow behind the middle of the S, what are your thoughts here?
I mean, I wouldn't call it simplistic, but I would call it stark. I mean, you know, again, to touch on what we were just talking about.
I think
it's kind of a no-nonsense logo. I like the fact that it does hearken. It is a symbol. It is a version of that insignia that we have seen before. Like Kingdom Come. But without that black background, with that gold, bright, optimistic background, I think whatever insignia they were going to choose, James Gunn was going to want to try to make it his own. And this is sort of paying homage to what has come before, but putting his stamp on it as well. And the thing with these insignias, they change. I feel like if they hadn't used that big chunky one for Cavill, I think they would have gone in that direction. Just those stark straight lines, like that does not ring gun to me.
Right.
More sort of the big chunky classic S. That seems more James Gunn to me. But again, you know, he has said in interviews he didn't know how to do this movie for a long time. And that DC, prior to him, you know, being the architect of the new DC universe, that they'd approached him to direct a Superman movie. And he'd said no. Right. Because he's like, I don't know how to do that. And then he came up with an idea. So whatever that idea is, I imagine it is going to fit perfectly with this new insignia. I think it looks very cool.
Yeah, I like it too. It's I guess you're right. Not simplistic, stark. It's simple. It's to the point. I guess not simplistic in a way that it's like anybody could have done it. I mean, more like, it's no nonsense, no frills. It's not trying to grab your attention. It just is. And it seems Spartan. Very... Yeah, exactly. And it feels connectable. It feels like you feel like this sense of like, oh, wow, I can believe in this. And I don't know. Some people may think it's ridiculous. But when I look at the logo, that's what I feel. That's what I see. And I like the little kind of sun bursting through the middle of the S as kind of showing a bit of like where he's from and what gives him strength and energy. So all of it was, and plus the lettering, the font of the lettering feels Kryptonian, which I kind of like as well. So there's a lot about the logo here that I'm very happy to see as a preview for what may be coming here when we finally get to see his costume in live action, which everyone's excited about.
Are you saying we as superhero and comic book fans read too much into things? Is that what you were trying to say before?
What? Not me. No way. Just give it to me. I'll take it, whatever it is. Anyway, let's take a quick break and we're going to jump into some more stories here right after this. Hello, Geek Buddies fans. Before we jump into today's episode, let's give a warm thank you to our sponsor, Marquee TV. Their support is why we're able to bring this podcast to you. Marquee TV isn't just any streaming service. They're your gateway to an incredible world of arts and culture.
That's right, Johnny. I've explored Marquee TV, and I've been amazed by their vast library of performances, exclusive interviews, and behind-the-scenes content. It is a treasure trove for any arts and culture lover. Right now, I'm in the middle of watching the Royal Shakespeare Company's production of The Tempest, and I've also got my eye on that Shakespeare masterclass taught by Dame Judi Dench.
Yeah, Shannon, and speaking of the RSC, I watched Christopher Eccleston's performance of Macbeth last night, and I'm going to jump into Kit Harington's performance of Henry V from the Donmar Warehouse.
Imagine having the world's most breathtaking ballets, dramatic theater productions, and magical operas at your fingertip. That's the experience Marquee TV offers, making the arts accessible wherever you are.
And we've got a special treat for our listeners. Marquee TV offers 3 months of access for just 99 cents. That's right, 3 months for only 99 cents with the code BUDDIES, BUDDIES. Simply visit Marquee.tv and use the promo code Buddies to dive into the world of arts like never before. Bring the arts home with Marquee TV. Get 3 months for just 99 cents. Visit Marquee.tv to start your journey into the world of arts now. Use code Buddies.
Explore the extensive library of performances on Marquee TV today and keep up with the latest in art streaming by following at Marquee TV on social media.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Yeah, man, good stuff. Well, we're not necessarily done with the world of heroes and literally putting it on the nose here, because the story is coming out here that Heroes, this NBC series that a lot of people still have a lot of affection for here, is apparently being rebooted and is in development from the creator, Tim Kring. This is according to Variety. The reboot would be titled Heroes Eclipsed and is set years after the events of the original superhero series as new evolved humans are discovering their powers. Kring is executive producing as well with his manager, Mosaic's Jordan Cerf. get that money. Heroes ran for four seasons on NBC from 2006 to 2010. A lot of people remember that Hayden Panettiere was a part of this. And of course, Hayden's had some interesting stuff going on off camera over the last few years. Jack Coleman, Milo Ventimiglia, who of course was fantastic in This Is Us and of course in the Rocky series. Masioka, that's son of... Anyway, Zachary Quinto in here as well. Ali Larder, Mr. Natalie Maines, or ex-Natalie Maines, Adrian Pasdar, and of course Greg Grunberg, who is J.J. Abrams' lucky rabbit's foot, was a part of this as well. So, and there's a lot of people who are involved in this situation that might be coming back as well in this. So I'm just really curious, Shannon, what are your thoughts when you're thinking of Heroes? Do you want Heroes to come back? Are you excited for a reboot of this? Because people thought the first season was good, second season was okay, and then it kind of slowly fell off a cliff because of the writer's strike that happened right around the same time. So what are your feelings about this? Is there unfinished business?
I mean, not to me. Like, okay, again, the first season of that show, I feel like for every good episode, we got three meh episodes.
Oh,
but that one good episode was so good that it kept you on that change. I mean, Heroes was really, I mean, what, I think you said it came out in 06 and ran for four seasons. Heroes, that was a cultural phenomenon.
For
like 2 years.
Yeah.
And then I want to say the writer strike happened at the end of 07 into the beginning of 08.
Yes.
So I feel like it was kind of already on the downward slip.
Yeah.
The second season was not quite as good as the first. I mean, I think for every good episode we got maybe five episodes. And I started watching the beginning of season three and I was like, this has kind of lost me. Like, there's too much other things going on in my life. Mm-hmm. This one is coming off the DVR. I mean, they tried to do this again. I think you said it was 2015 with Zach Levi.
Reborn. Yeah, Reborn with Zachary Levi. Yeah.
And that one didn't do too hot. I mean, the affection for that property wasn't there. So to me, this is a really interesting move to try to one more at bat for this property. What I do think is interesting is like it's being made with, you know, Universal Television, which, you know, NBC and Universal are the same company.
Right.
NBC is not definitely going to be the home for this. Like they could go to Sci-Fi. It could go straight to Peacock. The thing that encourages me, again, the state of our industry, how it's in a little bit of a contraction. Nobody wants to make anything. The fact that they are, even though it is, you know, an IP, the fact that they are starting, the gears are starting to move on the TV development machine again. That's the one positive that I take from this. But had Heroes Reborn, had it gotten great reviews, I absolutely would have tuned in.
Yeah.
But I don't even remember hearing bad reviews. I just don't remember hearing people talk about it at all. And I think that's almost worse, is when people don't know that your show exists.
Well, and listen, let's Tim Kring worked on the Treadstone series, which I think got decent reviews to good reviews, but clearly wasn't a long lasting series. Then he worked on Crossing Jordan, Dig and Touch. So these are not ones that necessarily like blew up, right? Heroes was the one that blew up. And then it just was a law of diminishing returns every subsequent season. So you could argue that they've never been able to capture the magic from the first season, every subsequent season, including the Heroes Reborn. So to me, this feels like, okay, this is still an IP that has attention, has people's interest. So, okay, we'll give it a chance. But like you said, it'll probably be a 6 to 8 episode limited series, maybe 10 at the most. And it'll probably go to a streaming service. Like Paramount Plus seems to be like a perfect place for it to end up if you were able to work out rights and all of that. Peacock seems like it could go there, but it might get lost, you know, in the Peacock situation. So we'll see. Or Prime could go. There's a number. Netflix even has deals with a number of these companies now in ways that they didn't before because of the streaming stuff. So I think there's possibilities. Why not try it out? See what happens. I wonder how much of the original cast would Quinto come back? Would any of these people come back? Would it be a mixture of the Heroes Reborn and the original Heroes cast, or would it be a completely new cast and they're just going forward with it and seeing what they can do? I don't know. It feels like you're chasing the magic of that first season and you might not ever get it. So, but like, hey man, it's work. Actors, writers, producers, production people. So I'm happy for it, but I'm not a Heroes person. So I'm not necessarily excited to see it because that second season really kind of killed it for me, you know? So that's my two.
Yeah, agreed. As a writer, I mean, I feel like the audience from that first Heroes series, I mean, again, that was almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We've moved on in our tastes too for this hero stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know if anyone from the cast is that beloved that them coming back is like, oh, I got to watch this. I think if you like use the IP and use new people.
Right.
And try to tell the best story that you can do, because ultimately that's what it comes down to. Like, it doesn't matter if you have everyone from the first series, if the story's not good, it's not going to work. So tell the best story that you can. If you can organically work someone in, if you can organically work Hayden Panettiere in there or Zach Quinto, if you could get Zach Quinto, I think he would probably be the toughest get. But if you have a good story that's worth telling, the talent will follow that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, we'll see. And we saw Hayden Panettiere in the Scream 6 film, so clearly there's possibilities for that. Speaking of reboots, here's another story for rebooting here. Blair Witch situation. Jason Blum is reviving the Blair Witch project for Lionsgate. And a lot of people are excited about this because it's a low-budget approach, possibly, because of how Jason Blum usually handles things in a Blumhouse. And remember, he just did, he just did The Purge. He did Paranormal Activity, Megan, and Five Nights at Freddy's. So Blumhouse has some good momentum behind them right now. This announcement was made at CinemaCon. Of course, I'm not there. I couldn't go for my own personal reasons. But this is the situation here. Plot details have not been revealed, but Lionsgate Motion Picture Group Chairman Adam Fogelson referred to the film as, quote, a new vision for Blair Witch that will reintroduce this horror classic for a new generation, and talked about how fortunate he was to work with Jason many times over. The producers on this will be Roy Lee, who previously produced the 2016 Blair Witch reboot, which I think some horror people really do like. And so there we go. But no talk about anybody who was involved in the original. And I saw some tweets from somebody who was involved in the original talking about what an experience it was, what a great time it was, and that they hope they capture the magic again. But the fact that they're not being consulted on it, they don't think it's malicious, but they think it's a little bit of a shame. So again, this is a situation where you keep trying to capture the magic of this unique moment, which was right at the beginning of found footage film, found footage television, and each subsequent attempt to bring this to life again has been met with mixed results. Why try this again? Shannon, your thoughts here.
I mean, we are living in the age of IP. If something has ever been successful at some point, there is value attributed to that. It's like, hey, it worked once. It has to work again. The thing with Blair Witch, I mean, again, that was a cultural phenomenon. I mean, when that movie came out, because the found footage films, that really wasn't a thing. Yeah. When this was playing the film festivals, I can't remember if it was Sundance or if it was, I think it was Sundance, when they put up the posters, the missing posters, where people thought this was actually real. That was part of the allure. Yeah. And also, when you saw this movie in a theater, you could see that movie was never meant to be seen in a theater because it was shot. It was shot with a different aspect ratio. Uh-huh. How much the cameras bounced around. People were walking out of my theater getting sick because, again, our eyes, we weren't meant to see that. This story that they slowly reveal in that short, it's a really compelling story. Yeah. And it's one that we just don't know that much about. Like, flash forward a year, they couldn't recapture it a year later.
Yeah.
With, I mean, even the way they titled it, Book of Shadows, Blair Witch 2, is like, what? Why do you flip it? I remember when the Blair Witch reboot came out in like 2016. And I know it's sort of connected to the first movie, that it's like it's the brother of the Heather character, I think. And like, again, I don't know anyone that has watched it. I don't travel in a lot of horror circles, so I don't know if it's good or bad. But the story that they laid out in that first movie, there is something interesting there. And I do think that is material that is worth mining. And the guy to mine it is Jason Blum. I mean, he's got a terrific track record of delivering these smaller budgeted films with incredible returns. Yeah. So if you're able to make this for, $5 million, $10 million, $12 million. I mean, I know to us, that's like, man, that's a lot of money. Yeah. For a movie, that's not a lot of money, even though the first one was made for like, what, $200,000? I mean, maybe even less. I think there is a way to mine some value out of this property. And even though I'm not a horror guy, that first movie was really intriguing from a storytelling standpoint. And I hope that they are able to squeeze as much out of that as they can, because I feel like at this point, again, having not seen the 2016, at this point, they haven't done it yet.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a shame. You know, they made $248 million off that first movie. So I'd love to find out how much these guys actually got paid. Because yes, the distributor, you know, got attention for your film, but like, I hope they made some cool cash. And the fact that they have not been involved in the subsequent installments, I think is such a shame, because these are the people that laid the foundation for it. And I just hate when studios like ice out the creators of things that they're going to make money off of simply because they bought the rights to it. There's a way to approach this, I think, that is more respectful to the creators, but who knows? Hopefully they make some kind of deal off of this. Jason Blum seems like a guy who cares about the creators of these things. So hopefully he'll square something away. All right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk about some trailers here right after this. Let's go.
Speaking of Blumhouse, we're going to start off with some trailers with a trailer that Johnny pointed me to yesterday as we were recording this, a trailer for Speak No Evil. So again, this is a Blumhouse production. This is from writer-director James Watkins, who also did an episode of Black Mirror. I believe this is a remake of a Danish film.
Yes.
This one is starring James McAvoy, Scoot McNairy, Mackenzie Davis. This is the funny thing about this movie. As I was watching this trailer, having come back from my honeymoon just a couple months ago, my wife on vacation, she really wants to make friends with people. We were at a resort, like, oh, there's a couple over there. Let's go have a drink. This trailer is all the reasons why you shouldn't do that. This one, it's a family's invited to spend a weekend in an idyllic country house, go from a dream vacation to a psychological nightmare. At what point did it start where James McAvoy, who always comes off as so friendly and so charming, has played some incredible roles, that he started to be absolutely terrifying, that it started with Split, sort of went into Glass, and now it's continuing with this. And I would argue that this one might be the most terrifying. This looks very, very interesting, coming out in September. So it's around that Halloween time. Johnny, what did you think of our first look at Speak No Evil?
Oh man, it was super scary. I mean, I'm a fool, because I thought about doing a trailer reaction for it last night as we were recording it, but it only had like 20,000. I woke up this morning, 2.5 million views. I'm like, son of a bitch. So like, these are those moments you make those decisions as a YouTube creator. But like, I watched it this morning, because I was going to do a trailer reaction this morning, but then I was like, I'll probably pass the time. So I'm glad we're talking about it. I really like this trailer. I like that it's got some strong actors, with Mackenzie Davis and Scoot McNairy and James McAvoy and Aisling Franciosi, who I really liked. Aisling in the most recent Voyage to Demeter, the Dracula film that they had. I thought she was good in that. I have not seen The Nightingale yet, which she was nominated for a number of things for as a lead actress, because everyone tells me it's a very, very brutal film. So I got to see this because everyone says she's such a good actress. So this is four good actors in this situation. And yes, it's only a film that's 2 years old. The original came out 2 years ago, the Danish original. And it reminds me of Never Let Me Go, or whatever it was, the Let Me In, that one with the kid who's a vampire.
With Abigail Breslin.
Yeah, right. And so this one at the end, though, the kid like basically saying he's got his tongue cut out. And I was like, oh, shit. So seeing McAvoy turn evil, it's the muscles. It has to be the muscles. It's the HGH. It's all that stuff. Allegedly, I'm joking about that. But like, it makes him so intimidating. That scene when Mackenzie's cut her finger and he's like, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what you're talking about. It is so scary. And then like, oh, you should have seen your faces. Fuck you. And I agree with you. I don't mind talking to people, meeting people. When we're all in a group session on vacation, I got no problem. It drives my lady outlaw insane because I make fast friends. But in no way do I want to go to their house or go hang out with them any farther than that group situation. I don't like to do that. So I meet your lady halfway. I don't go all the way because I go more towards your side by the end of the conversation. So I understand, because this is exactly what I fear happening all the time. Weird shit like this. So this looks great. I hope it's good. I always hesitate with English adaptations of European stuff, but I reserve judgment till I see it. But I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I thought this trailer, again, flashes of my honeymoon were just coming into my head. If that couple from New York had wanted to hang out. Oh. But yeah, James McAvoy, James McAvoy is an incredible, incredible actor.
Like, yes.
He's so, yes. So good. And Mackenzie Davis as well. Like, Terminator Dark Horizon, you know, you and I are fans of that film.
Yep.
We might be the only ones. But she did an incredible job in that. Love Scoot. I mean, I saw Last Voyage of the Demeter as well. I like the actress that you mentioned, even though I thought that movie, I was like, oh,
yeah.
what a lot of wasted potential. But this one does look absolutely terrifying. And this is the type of horror movie I could go see. A lot of my horror fears come from religious based, because I was brought up in a very strict Southern Baptist household. But this one comes out Friday, September 13th. So Friday the 13th.
Wow, that far ahead. Okay.
They picked a good date.
That's true.
Our next trailer, this is what we call a trailer audible. We were going to talk about one, then I saw the trailer for this came out this morning, and I texted Johnny 10 minutes before we recorded, and I said, trailer audible. And this is the first trailer for the Apple series Dark Matter. So this is based on a book from author Blake Crouch, who also was, I think he wrote some episode. He is creatively involved in this. This one stars Joel Edgerton, Jennifer Connelly. This is an alternate reality, not a horror film, but it's an alternate reality thriller. I mean, the book, Mike Vogel is the one who gave me this book, saying, you're going to start this and you're not going to put it down. I think I finished it in 2 or 3 days. But this is about this, you know, happily married man who he reached a crossroads in his life. Am I going to go get married, or am I going to work on this crazy science project? And he got married and he's in a happy marriage. But he still kind of wonders, what would have happened if I had stayed with that crazy science project? Mm-hmm. And one night, based on the trailer, he is kidnapped, and we find out he is kidnapped by the version of himself who went with the crazy science project. This is a fascinating story. I really hope they nailed it. I'm a huge fan of Joel Edgerton. I'm excited about this one. Johnny, what did you think of our first look at Dark Matter?
Again, Apple TV is, I mean, if you don't have a subscription to Apple TV, you're missing out on some incredible stuff, not just movies, but TV shows, documentaries. There's so much that Apple TV is doing that is so worth your $6 to $9 that you would pay a month for all this incredible content. And here is another show that looks like it's going to be super interesting and challenging and fascinating, with some good writing and fantastic actors. As you said, Joel Edgerton, Jennifer Connelly. Is that Alice Braga who's there, who plays the counterpart? A number of good actors involved in this one. And it's what looks to be some great writing. I love the way it's shot. The direction here works really well. And this idea of like multiple realities, it's like Sliding Doors. It's like It's a Wonderful Life. It's like that show with that we were talking about earlier, J.K. Simmons' counterpart, where it's like, what would your life be like if you had chosen this path? What would your life be like if you'd chosen that path? Well, what happens if you've created so many clones of yourself that one of these clones achieves some sort of sentient ability to outsmart you and reverse this process on you? And now you're trying to figure out how to get back to it. But then again, are you the real person, right? What do we see in Invincible all the time? Those two guys, who's the real clone? You know, like that kind of thing. So that all of that, and we're seeing that in X-Men 97. Was it Madeline Pryor? Was it Jean? Who was the real person with the memory? So all of that is super fascinating. But of course, when you present something like that, the tightrope is so high because there are so many ways to fall off that tightrope and lose the plot of a show like this, or if it was a movie like this. So to me, it looks great. I'm excited. Love Joel. Love all the actors involved. It's got me intrigued. Will it work? I don't know. So, and you tell me, you've read the book. You say it's a fantastic book. So they clearly have a great source material to jump off from to do this.
It is excellent. Like we were talking before we started recording, I'm like, this is what, I mean, obviously this is a very different type of story, but I'm like, this is what, for me at least, Multiverse of Madness could have been.
Right.
Seeing these versions of you from all these different realities. Every time you come to a fork in the road in your life and you make a choice, there's a version of you that made the other choice, and how keeps splintering and splintering and splintering. This is coming out. I believe it the first episode drops on May 8th. So, you know, we have a great summer of movies coming up, but there's going to be a great summer of streaming as well.
Yeah.
Once we get through the summer, we get to, if we make it to October, we have the sequel to Joker Folie à Deux. So this is once again from Todd Phillips, Joaquin Phoenix back as Arthur Fleck, the Joker, Lady Gaga coming in as maybe Dr. Harleen Quinzel, but Harley Quinn. You know, there are trailers when they come out that it's like, man, there is a lot of love and care put into how this looks. Now, I don't know what some of our audience feelings were on the first Joker. I know there was a lot of maybe not hesitance, but maybe some nerves about this type of movie, about this type of individual coming out at this time.
Yeah.
This one does not seem as heavy on that side. It looks like it's leaning in more into the damaged relationships that people can have. But I thought this trailer was pretty outstanding. I'll talk more on it, but I know Johnny's got way more and way better to say it. So no. Johnny, what did you think of our first look at Joker Folie à Deux?
Well, I did my trailer reaction immediately. As soon as they said it was going to be at 6:30, I was like glued, and they dropped it. And I'll tell you this, the first trailers for the original Joker movie, that just impressed me on so many levels, on what it was doing an homage to, and then what it was telling, the story it was telling, and how it was bringing the Joker into a real world situation and what it was commenting on in our society. And I thought everything they did in that movie worked, and I was blown away by it. I've gone back and watched it every few months because it's not a film that I think you can consistently watch unless something's wrong with your brain. Because it's a very harrowing film in the way it ends and how it all goes about. So I was like, okay, why do we need a sequel? This is such a great film on its own. And then they talk about Lady Gaga, and I'm like, and then you talk about a musical. I'm like, what? And then I see the trailer, and all my worries and concerns go right out the door and down the drain, because the feeling I had watching this trailer is the same feeling I had the first time I watched the original Joker trailer. And I was like, just excited for the masterpiece that we were about to witness. I sensed it from the trailer, and I sense this again here. The musical stuff absolutely works, because it's clear either Arthur's mind or Harley Quinn's mind, Harley Quinzel's mind. She's not a doctor, or is she a doctor undercover? Is she a patient? I don't know. She's the one that says, let's get out of here. Only a doctor can get you out of there. So what does that mean? Going from the black umbrellas to the multicolor umbrellas, them dancing, the spotlight shot of the Joker as he's there, like Arthur is the Joker there, I thought was stunning. Do they have a talk show? It's not out of the realm of possibility. That's the craziness. Like, we may think it's Arthur's mind, but it could actually be real. It could actually be real, because we're such a sick society that, like, we're always looking for these things that we shouldn't be watching, but we watch anyway. Reality empire is built on shit like that. And so I'm watching all of this and I'm just fascinated. Yet you can sense there's going to be a strong commentary about a number of things, possibly mental health, possibly about how our society treats mental health, possibly about love and romance and how we really see it, how it should be, all these things. And then the backdrop of a musical approach, 100%, all of it totally, totally worked for me. And I saw already all these condescending snob critics coming out and coming after the film and coming after the original movie. And I'm like, fuck off, man. This is going to be great. We're going to love it. That last one made $1 billion, got nominated for 11 Oscars, and won, I think, 2 or 3 Oscars with Joaquin and the composer. So look, you can be snooty and go like, wow, this is clicky Oscar bait, and this is clearly borrowing off of blah, blah, blah. Do all that shit you want. It's going to go make its money, and you're going to sit there all upset about it. So fuck off. This looks great. That's my two cents.
I mean, the amount of artistry that went into some of those shots, especially that shot when they're on the other side of the in between with the glass in between, and she draws that little smile, and how he puts his face, and then I mean there's just a craftsmanship to this type of movie that you don't always see. And again, it's talking about the first one, like, you can't believe that the guy who directed Old School is the one behind this. But also, I mean, I had read some potential criticism over, like, you know, she's not the doctor. And it's like, well, this automatically made me think of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, how many of those patients were voluntarily committed.
Right.
And could leave at any time. And then you see the fact that she is kind of walking around in you know, outside of the asylum, outside of Arkham. Yeah. It's like, oh, my gosh. Maybe she is Dr. Harlene Quinzel, who committed herself voluntarily. And then this guy is the reason she kind of steps out and she tries to help him get out.
Yeah.
I just think this looks like it's going to be one of those just very elevated artsy films. And I don't say that as a negative. I mean, I think, again, there was a lot of love put into this. And the fact that Joaquin Phoenix came back for it. You know, he's known to be, you know, pretty picky
with
what he chooses to be in. So the fact that he and Todd Phillips came back for this, I think it's probably a very, very good sign. But Joker Folie à Deux comes out October 4th.
And that was just a teaser. So we got a full official trailer with a story coming soon. So just enough for a teaser to get you excited. All right. Thank you, Shannon, for those trailers. Let's take a quick break and we'll jump into our review of the first episode a Fallout on Prime Video right after this.
They played a Johnny Cash song. I couldn't remember which one it was. In the beginning of this.
What is that one?
I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. I think I tried to hum Ring of Fire and that's not what came out.
I love it. All right. Well, Shannon, Fallout is here. It has dropped. It is officially Fallout Day on Prime Video. All the episodes have dropped, which has already caused a lot of drama and people being upset about dropping so many episodes at once. But it is out, episode one here, based on the popular video game series that a lot of people love. Episode one was all we're going to talk about here, the end. It's an hour and 15 minutes. This one was directed by Jonathan Nolan, who, of course, you know, is Christopher Nolan's brother and had done Westworld, the series there on HBO. This one was written by Geneva Robertson-Dworet, Graham Wagner, who are also the creators on this, with executive story editor Chaz Hawkins. This one with Ella Purnell leading the way here as Lucy. And we got a good glimpse into this world. We start off with Walton Goggins, who will, of course, become the character he becomes here, the ghoul. He is Cooper Howard initially. And what happens, we see this bomb, this explosion of bombs go off. And basically, we just get the world as we saw it initially, suffering through a nuclear explosion. And then we jump two centuries forward to this world living underground with these different vaults, essentially to mean different communities within each of those vaults. And we're treated to an inter-vault marriage, and that leads to all kinds of madness. And we also get to meet Maximus, who is part of the surface people who have the fights and whatever. So we got to see a good idea of the world in this first episode, a good idea of the conflict, good introduction of Lucy and Maximus, and the idea and this mystery about her father. So there was so much in this first episode that I thought was stunning visually. I thought was really well written, really well acted, and you were immediately thrust into this world. And there was a lot of blood and gore with some of the fights that went down in this episode as well. So what are your thoughts overall on this episode? What stood out to you? What worked for you? What didn't work for you?
I mean, anytime that the first episode of a series is an hour and 15 minutes, I'm always like, ugh.
You're not wrong. Especially one based on a video game series. You're like, oh, an hour and 15?
Yeah. This is almost a movie at this point.
Yeah, true. Good point. Yes.
But those hour and 15 minutes were great. I mean, you can see the amount of care that was put into this and the amount of money as well. I mean, this looks like a pretty pricey series. You know, our introduction to Walton Goggins' character at the beginning, we see that we're living in sort of an alternate history where post-World War II, like the technology is a little further advanced than what we would have had.
Yeah, and so him telling 1950s. Yeah.
Yeah, it looks like mid-50s, maybe to early 60s. But talking about mushroom clouds with his daughter and how, if you hold your thumb up, and that kind of, you know, gives us the sense of that, you know, that famous like insignia that they have with a little blonde guy with the thumbs up giving us a wink. And then we see just this stunning shot of all of these bombs going off in Los Angeles. I mean, the fact that they start the episode with the end, and it's like we are literally watching the end of the world. And then you fast forward like 219 years later, and we see this post-nuclear subterranean kind of idyllic society where everyone is dressed the same, everyone's super polite. But then you run into a problem that when you have X amount of people contained, at some point everyone becomes cousins.
Yeah.
And to continue, you know, to continue society, you have to marry someone outside of that bloodline. And we find out that Ella Purnell's Lucy, it's like, like literally doing the kissing cousins.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to mess around with your cousin for a little bit. But what you want to do is marry someone else. And we find out that the great Leslie Uggams is in this show as one of the kind of Vault 33's counsel, along with Zach Cherry. From Apple's Severance. And then we get to see Kyle MacLachlan, who is the leader of this vault, and what goes into a marriage between these two vaults. And we meet Vault 32. We find out that their crops, like, they got hit by blight. Nothing's working. We see this great wedding celebration and how, you know, Lucy was going to meet her groom on the day of the wedding.
Essentially arranged marriages is what they have. Yeah.
And based off of her friend's reaction, she got a good one. She got a good looking guy. And the friend's husband takes a little bit of umbrage with that comment. But they go to, you know, their new home and immediately something is off. And we find out that these people from Vault 32, doesn't seem like they're the people from Vault 32. They're from the above world and they have come to raid. And throughout this, we see Lucy have to kill her husband and her father is taken away. Flash forward to Maximus, who is in this sort of new society, this sort of maybe new government that they have going on, this brotherhood. And for whatever reason, Maximus is not loved amongst his peers, except by his main friend. I just thought everything was really, really well done. And having such a very, you know, brief knowledge of the game, there's just so much love and care put into this. The guys that are in those giant suits, I guess they're called knights because Maximus, his friend is made a squire, is anointed to be a squire. And then the next day they put their boot on and there's some sort of blade lodged in it. And Maximus gets to take their spot and becomes this squire to this, you know, mechanized knight. And then we end up meeting Walton Goggins, the ghoul, who is some sort of mutant who has lived since this bomb went off. I mean, they've just established these three distinct worlds. These three distinct groups that you have the idyllic world of the vaults, the brotherhood trying to reestablish society, and essentially the Wild West with nuclear radiated mutants. It's a big, rich world. Prime for storytelling. I really enjoyed the first episode. I had to watch it in two sittings because I started watching it last night. I was like, oh yeah, I ain't gonna make it to the end of this. But this first episode is really cut into nice individual chapters. It reaches a natural endpoint. I was able to finish it this morning. I mean, I was surprised that they would drop this all at once because this seems like the thing that people would come back and come back to.
I was surprised by how much I enjoyed how they fleshed out this world and how right they got this world. As someone who only has a cursory understanding of Fallout, I you know, immediately it's the logo of the kid with the thumbs up, like seeing all of that, it was very recognizable. The yellow and blue, very recognizable. Brotherhood of Steel, I didn't know too much about, so seeing the way that was laid out, I thought was really interesting. And of course, a bunch of dudes would totally create some sort of medieval knights type of thing. That makes so much sense. as a way of doing things up there. So no surprise. And so you see that come through and you're like, okay, great. Each of these sections are very fleshed out. And even the opening, right? You even have a guy who calls Walton Goggins' character a pinko. So clearly there's even the 1950s, you've got the Red Scare going on. Even if this is an alternate Earth, an alternate timeline, there's still the Red Scare going on. And you find out that the nuclear war is with China. And certainly nowadays, China has been a big deal nowadays in our conversation, certainly with the Ukraine war and the Russian war, the idea of nuclear bombs possibly being used. All these things are very relevant and topical, if dangerously so, but still, this is a show that I think takes advantage of that in a good way in telling its story. And it's a nice departure from what I understand from the original story in the games. So it can stand on its own. You don't have to have played the games to understand what's happening here. And I'm sure there are Easter eggs all over these episodes for people who have played the games. Maybe the names on the wedding dress are names of people who've been characters in the game or whatever. So you might find out. But the idea of one of the big central ideas of the game is that it's a young child going on to the surface to find their parent who's maybe been killed or kidnapped. So we have that in essence here at the beginning with Lucy and what happens with her dad with Kyle MacLachlan. But also we get this mystery that there's a thing that Kyle MacLachlan has done when that woman who takes them says, you know, you've never told them what they are. You should tell them what they are. And then she gives him the choice. So clearly there's enough mystery here to keep us interested to go on into the next few episodes. And I'm totally going to finish this out this weekend because this was a great opening to this series. They got me excited about it, introduced the world really well. I like the actors here. I don't think I've seen Ella Purnell in anything, I don't think. And if I did, it didn't really register as
Army of the Dead. Huh? Army of the Dead. She's the lead in Army of the Dead.
Right. Yes. Oh, I totally forgot about that. Yes, 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 yes. Army of the Dead. Okay, fair point, fair point. Sorry. So I guess it didn't register as strongly as I would because I was focused on Batista. So fair point on that in that way. But she is a British actress, and I liked her approach. And I like the fact that they are so nonchalant about sex, about, you know, messing around with your cousins. There's no kind of hiding that. Why? Because they're all in the same thing. So those old kind of ideas about it would have been stripped away. It's a simplistic approach, a practical approach. I kind of like that overall as an approach to this situation. So once we get extended time with her on the surface, I think it's going to be real interesting to see how much more of that is going to play itself out weird and interesting and funny fish out of the water kind of ways. But on the other side of the Brotherhood of the Seal stuff, I love how that's established. So because he's a guy who is clearly not as good as everybody else, a bit of a fuck up. Did he do what he did to his friend or did someone else do it, even though he claims it wasn't him? He takes the place and his friend almost thinks that it is him and almost respects the fact that he did it, that kind of ingenuity and that kind of drive and determination, because she seems to be the alpha in that relationship. And he did a little bit of an alpha move by maybe possibly doing this to her so he could take her place. I like that. So there's a lot of elements story-wise and character-wise and relationship-wise that are intriguing and mysterious and going to be fun to explore as the series goes along. Plus, the direction here I thought was great, the cinematography, the set design, the way they really flesh out these worlds to make them believable completely worked for me as well. There was clearly a lot of money put into this. And of course, the design of the ghoul, even more so when you look at that, it worked really well.
I mean, if you enjoyed Walton Goggins' performance as the ghoul, specifically the ghoul, not talking about the beginning, specifically as the ghoul, then going back and watching Justified, the FX show. Yeah. Because that what he's doing, that is straight up Boyd Crowder. Yeah. Like that is straight up Boyd. That's his character. And I don't say that as a negative. Like that character was went on an incredible journey. It was so much fun to watch. And he's definitely sprinkling Boyd Crowder into the ghoul. And the thing that I loved about the vaulties, and this has been done before, but right. I think because it was just kind of on such a mass scale, the way that when a society is closed off, how it ceases to sort of socially progress.
Yeah.
Thinking about when Lucy goes out and she looks at, you know, the decimated Santa Monica Pier and she says, okie dokie.
Like, yeah.
there have been no outside influences coming into the vault in over 200 years. So everyone kind of sounds like they're from the 1950s. Like I thought that was such a great choice. I mean, it's very similar to what they did with Brendan Fraser's character in that Blast from the Past movie, which is not a great movie, but I loved the choice that it just works so well with this world that she's coming into, how she's not only bright-eyed and optimistic, going to look for her father. But she also has this sheen of 1950s sort of Leave It to Beaver perfection. Yeah. I think that's going to make for some very fun. That's going to make for some very fun scene work.
Yeah, and she's a fighter, right? I mean, we see when she fights off what's his face, the guy Monty, I think his name is. She fights mm-hmm. him off. She fights there, gets the weapons, does what needs to be done, takes out as many people as she caught, saves her brother. Norman, I think, is going to be an interesting part of this series as well. I like that actor. I've seen him in like the King of Staten Island and a couple other things. So I like that guy. So what's his role going to be in all this? I'm curious to see overall. And I like this idea where Norman initially is presented as a guy who's not paying attention, not wanting to be in the family book club, playing his video games, kind of like some kids do in their own families. But he's the one that says to her when she wants to send a search party up to find her father, he's the one that says to her they don't want to find him because if they do, they won't be in charge anymore. And so you see that even within that enclave, there was still the human politics of jealousy, of the desire for power, of wanting to backstab people in order to get to a certain situation. So for all the idyllic approach, and we see with Lucy presenting herself for this arranged marriage, talking about all her pluses as a person, pipe fitting club, she's got A+, all these things that she does that are very positive to get her nominated for this. But clearly this also because she's the overseer's daughter. So that helps in a nepo baby kind of way to put her in that position as well. But I'm wondering if we're going to find out that one of these people was involved in betraying the vault in order so they could establish themselves in power. I wonder if we're going to find that out as the show goes along, and what's Maximus's role in all of this? Because clearly he's a hesitant fighter, whereas Lucy has no problem fighting. So that's going to be an interesting dichotomy. And what's the role the ghoul is going to play in all of this? And all three of them, it's a three lead show, basically, Shannon. So are they going to be able to balance enough screen time for all three of these to flesh out the storylines really well so that when we get to their interactions and we get to the end of the series, that it's a satisfying conclusion for this particular season of Fallout? And we have the MacGuffin, right? He's got a picture, Maximus does. Who is this person? What have they stolen? What's the deal here? Is that going to wrap up with who she's trying to find with her father? So very, very curious to see what answers we're going to get to these mysteries. And I'm definitely intrigued for sure.
Yeah, we have yet to be introduced to Michael Emerson's character, which is the guy on the, like, this is who we're looking for. That's definitely who Maximus is looking for, and it's definitely who the ghoul is looking for. Yeah. And more than likely, he is going to be connected to Lucy's dad as well.
Well, probably. 100%. Probably because of what Lee Moldovar, that's Sarita Chowdhury's character, said when she said, like, you haven't told them what they are. So, yeah, it's going to be real curious to see that. Plus, dude, we got Matt Berry, Mikhail T. Williamson. This is a lot of good actors in this series. So it's going to be fun to see them all popping up with their particular storylines in here in the show. So, Ernie, any final words, brother, before we wrap up?
No, I'm curious if, like, I'm going to try to show my wife this pilot. The hour 15 runtime, she's probably going to be like, pass. But this is a show that, because it is kind of off kilter, I think this is a show she would enjoy. But right. If she passes, I'm going to try to get through this one as quickly as possible. And maybe the three of us can do a season spoiler review.
I would love to do that. I would absolutely love to do that as a Geek Bites episode. Done and done. And speaking of the three of us, remember, just letting you all know, Michael Vogel and I will be reviewing X-Men 97, spoiler review of it, probably tomorrow or Saturday. So it'll be up either tomorrow or Saturday for you all. And I'll probably ask Michael about a couple other stories that have happened. So maybe a mini Geek Buddies episode, not just the review of X-Men 97 episode 5 there for the two of us. So just look for that coming up later in tomorrow or Saturday. All right, there you go. That's our episode of Geek Buddies. That we did. The three of us will be back together next week fully with the shows and everything that's happening there now that Homie is back from Japan, and we're looking forward to it. Shannon, first of all, thanks to everybody who watching or listening to us. Shannon, what do we have to tell them?
Yeah, if you like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies, on Instagram @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung, on Instagram @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Roka, it is @TheRokaSays. If you would like to follow the apps at Mr. Vogel, say konnichiwa to him. Ask him Ginky Deska. That means how you doing in Japanese. You can follow him @MKToon.
There you go. And if you follow us, please remember to subscribe to the podcast. We have some great people coming aboard sponsoring our show. We just got Marquee TV. You can get 3 months of Marquee TV for 99 cents. All kinds of Shakespeare stuff, or ballet, jazz, concerts, documentaries, a really great thing. So go and get involved in it. Patronize the people who support our show. Like all these people that have been part of, all these clients have been a part of. We just did a Regal Unlimited ad that should be running as well. Go and sign up for Regal. I have Regal. It is great. I mean, I'm going to go see Civil War and IMAX for $5 on Regal. And that, those are those things that are, you can get those discounts. It pays for itself in two visits. So please patronize the clients who support our show if you're listening to us on the podcast, so that they will keep sponsoring our show and supporting us as we go along. As for the channel here, please remember to subscribe to the channel. Hit that bell button to see we're dropping all the content we do here on the Outlaw Nation channel, including all the Geek Buddies content we do here as well. All right, y'all take care of yourselves. Be well. And we'll talk to you next time with another brand new episode here of the
Geek Buddies.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.